With the country in the grip of an economic meltdown, you might have used this holiday season to try out some new ways to give. Well, did you make your own gifts? Did you set spending limits? Are you trying to find new ways to show people that you love them? Well, maybe you're getting rid of the whole buying stuff mentality completely. Well, we'd love to hear about how that went for you this season. Our guest this morning says forget the credit cards and get creative. Good morning and happy holidays to you. I'm Veronica Rickert in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, we'd love to hear from you this hour and tell us how you got creative this holiday season. Did it hurt to cut back, or are you finding the silver lining? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send us email at talk@wpr.org. Connie Kilmark is our guest this hour. It's great to have her here in the studio with us. She's the founder of the Madison-based counseling and consulting firm Kilmark and Associates. And Connie Kilmark, thank you so much for coming in the midst of all this snow today.
I swam through the snow in my car ever so slowly, and there's no traffic out, so it was really kind of beautiful in a hushed sort of romantic sense. Every branch is outlined with a frosting of snow today. It's just, you know, if you're going to have snow every single day, we're going to become connoisseurs of snowfalls.
We'll get to learn all the different kinds and which ones are the most beautiful. It does seem to be especially magical out there. And it's a great morning then to talk about what we're talking about, sort of appreciating the non-material ways to appreciate, to give, and to celebrate over Christmas. And I think a lot of us at this time of year, this year, obviously, because of the economic troubles that most of us are having, it can be easy to get into a mode of sort of poverty consciousness where you feel constricted, like you can't give as freely as you'd like to. What can we do to bring back a feeling of maybe more expansiveness and ease in our sense of giving this season?
I think the fact that we're all in this together is going to give us exactly the freedom that you're describing. I think if only one or two or ten of us sparsely sprinkled through the economy we're having these issues in just the way that we, some of us, have too much consumer debt and are feeling constrained, or some of us were laid off 2 years ago and are feeling constrained. I think if there's that privacy quality to the difficulties that an individual is having, that makes it much more difficult. The fact that this is national news every day, I did a breakfast presentation, I think it was the 14th of September or something like that, and it was after the beginnings of the big breaking news. And I remember on that very early morning saying, scrapping my notes and because of the weekend's worth of news, and beginning fresh and making some talking points that included things like, this fall, plant some bulbs. Next spring, plant a vegetable garden. And let's all think about the fact that we're in this together. So I think the fact that we are caught up in something that's happening to everybody gives us the freedom not to have to make appearances. We have freedom from this. We're allowed to simply figure out what we've known since we were a species, which is that celebration is something that social groups do. And I think it would take more effort to prevent us from celebrating than it would anything else.
Well, it's interesting, too, because I think in the past, you know, this was at least my perception as a kid. If somehow one of your relatives snuck in something homemade, you kind of turned up your nose and went, what's that? I want the toys. And as you got older, if you got that homemade gift, you wondered, are they being chintzy? Are they cutting back? But now it seems as though there has been a ground change about things that are homemade that almost seem more precious, more special, the things that people make with their own hands, with love. And also, if you're trying to do things that sort of allow you to tread lightly on the earth, that's also something that's in vogue right now. So it seems like a good time to enter into this sort of homemade giving.
I think you've put your finger on something. The younger folks are sort of the do-it-yourself, make-it-yourself. There's a sort of a movement that's valuing this again. And what I find so moving about anything that you make, let's call it a nice piece of baked goods or a surprise of some other sort, is that it's evidence that time and thought preceded the moment of the giving by quite a lot. And so there's this extra valence of non-generic intention that's built into such a gift. I'll give you an example. If you buy a birthday cake from a large supermarket, it might be beautifully decorated, but it was made by anonymous people for a generic consumer. It could have been gone, it could have gone to any home. If you yourself make a, how shall we say, less spectacularly decorated cake, it was made by a very specific and connected person for an extraordinarily specific and connected individual consumer, which means that you were thinking about it, you set aside your time, and so on. So the product is less important than the process by which that product arrives. And as a result, that's the kind of goods that can't be generically made. These are non-generic goods made by particular people for particular loved ones. So the content is far, far larger than just how does that cake taste.
Right. And if it's something like a cake, you've eaten it then and there. But sometimes it's something someone has made that you can look at over the years, and maybe it just, it ceases to be maybe a needle point, and it becomes just this expression of love. You look at it and you're reminded of that person, and you're reminded of your friendship, your relationship, and that's more precious than the thing itself.
It's very interesting that you would use the word needlepoint. About 30 to 40 years ago, when I first moved to Madison, one of my very first friends was a couple, and I got to thinking about this couple recently and have started to look for them because, of course, through search engines and so on, they're a little bit easier to find. And I remember during the course of our first year of friendship, she was making an extraordinarily beautiful needlepoint cover for her husband's family Bible. He was about to go to seminary, and the needlepoint that she had designed herself and had made in pettipoint, which is an even tinier form of needlepoint, reproduced the embossing of the leather on that cover. If I find this couple, I'm going to ask about that particular cover, because over 40 years, I cannot but believe that that has become more precious. It recalls a time when they were young and they were in their 20s and still on the front end of all of whatever life has brought their way. So it gains value over time. And as the person who made it passes away, it is even more valuable. So there you have it.
Can I ask what things you have in your life that are like that book cover? What have you held on to from friends that are now very precious?
I have a beautiful piece of needlework that my aunt, who was a single woman, she was a Sicilian, connected to my mom. She's my mom's older sister. She's a tough woman. She's now gone. She was, she had a congenital hip problem. And so the story goes that many surgeries later, it was worse than it started out to be. This is way back in the 20s that these surgeries would have been done. She was an extraordinarily gifted designer. She had gone to the Parsons School of Design in New York, a fashion designer, without much of a career because her job was to take care of my grandmother and my grandfather, who were not even English speakers, successful business people. But the oldest daughter's job in the Italian system is to take care of the parents. And she shared with me, she gave me a beautiful, beautiful, it was like a little silken nightgown from the 30s that she had made as a test piece for one of her classes at the Parsons School. You would have to know something about needlework to perceive the extraordinary perfection of this beautiful beige, shimmering silk nightgown. It would fit the way that the 30s costumes that you sometimes see on those incredibly glamorous stars from the 30s would have fit like that on somebody. But it demonstrated all the most difficult hand-stitching and hand-craft things that you could possibly ask someone to test. And so it was kind of like a sampler. And it's very precious to me. I still have it. And I think, you know, that because I'm a person who loves fiber and have spun and knit and woven and crocheted my whole life, it was the perfect gift from the perfect person to the perfect recipient.
That sounds amazing. Do you wear it?
Oh, I'm not. I'm far. I am not a very heavy person, but this was made for an elf. This was made for the perfect body of the 1930s, which would have been, I think, by even our standards, a little
tiny.
Undernourished. Yes.
Well, I have a, it's not of the Parsons design school level, but when I was a child, my mother began a picture of a princess on a bear, and she never finished it. And I grew up, it was maybe 3/4 done, so you could see the top of it, and then you saw just the bare canvas of
in
it.
In outline, yeah.
Right, right. And I got engaged when I was, 29, 28. And my mother decided to give that portrait to me as a wedding gift, but she couldn't finish it anymore. Her needlepoint skills had sort of languished and she'd gotten moved on, and I don't know if she could finish anymore. So she enlisted the help of my godmother, who is also an amazing, she's very crafty with the hands and sewing and needlepointing. And she finished the picture, and it's hanging now in my son's room. And to me, that is so precious. So it's been done half by my mother, half by my godmother, and I was able to give it to my son. I mean, I never thought I'd see it finished, but the fact that it was finished is so precious to me now.
And it's going to be very important as he gets older that he learn the story behind it and that he gain layers of significance that will have to build up as he becomes available to those stories in his own personal development. It will be a long time before it will mean everything that it will come to mean for him, because as a child, we just don't know. And then later we start to appreciate, and then we appreciate more. Hmm. So it will be important to make sure that you keep retelling him the story of that picture over time.
Well, this all sounds wonderful, but I have to ask one question. I've always thought that shopping is pretty fun. It's
it
all
is.
Well and good. I have to tell you two things. A, I don't have a lot of time, and B, I'm terrible with my hands. I can play piano and that kind of thing, but anything crafty, forget about it. What about letting go of that sense that you're losing something when you can't go to the mall to buy stuff, and if you feel like you're not very good at making stuff?
Explain to me whoever defined creativity as being only in material objects. I was trained formally as an art historian, and that deals in the physical, visual arts, architecture, stained glass, that kind of thing, painting. But whoever said that creativity only involved the visual arts? I've currently taken a tremendous interest in reading about the origins of music in the development of the human species. I've read a wonderful book called The Singing Neanderthals that makes a convincing Paleolithic argument that it is very likely that music comes before speech in the development of Homo sapiens and possibly even was present in Neanderthals. Now, not music as you and I would hear a Bach chorale, but music meaning melody and rhythm. And it's interesting that as you think about speaking to babies across every culture, everybody does it the same. We all draw out the vowels. We all speak in melody. We say, oh, look at the beautiful little toes. That's melody. Mm. There's a singing quality to the way that we instinctively speak to our infants that prepares them for the cadences and the melodies of more grammar-related speech later. And as a result, I think that music is one of the most profoundly creative, the most profoundly important of our endeavors as a species. When you play for someone or when they join in song at the piano, there is a gift that you're giving that I think is just as creative as anything that you could physically get. So recently I went to a party, and it was the last hour of this party was a whole bunch of us surrounding the piano, somebody doing sight reading of popular songs from the 30s and the 40s, not perfectly, but well enough that it supported our singing the words that we all loved. I can't remember a party experience more wonderful, and yet it used to be common. It used to be routine that was the way people entertained themselves. So don't cut your music ability short. Give the gift of an evening of accompanied song, and allow somebody to receive the gift of you saying, I'll play for an hour, popular songs as your guests sing with you.
Sounds pretty fun, I have to say.
Perfectly creative. And if you had a credit card and lots of room left on it and the confidence that it took, credit cards and shopping malls can make us very stupid. They can make us forget our ingenuity. So there you have ingenuity that you already have inside your mind and inside your hands. And it doesn't cost any future interest on your credit card balances.
So essentially you're saying get creative about being creative.
Yes. Think larger, for heaven's sakes. I will share once again a story that I've shared in the past a long time ago. I love somebody very much, and he loved me, and we were living on $60 a week. Now, 40 years ago, so it wasn't quite what $60 would be now. It was no money for Christmas. I remember being determined that I was going to show in an extravagant way how much I cared for this person. I took old used-up wrapping paper, and I cut it into strips. And on 365 different strips on the white side of the wrapping paper, I said, good for a back rub, good for I'll do the dishes tonight instead of you. I tied each and every piece of that wrapping paper into a little knot with the colorful side out. I stuffed it into a 25-cent apothecary jar that I had bought at a secondhand store. And I gave him, with a big red ribbon around the outside, I gave him the gift of that jar every single night for a year. Even when we were having a fight, this person was able to put his hand in that jar, and I had pledged, and I'm, you know, I had pledged that I would do whatever that thing said. So there were nights that I was going to do a back rub in the middle of an argument. If I were to do that gift over again, I might do a smaller jar with only 52 knots, and then I would have gotten to choose what night he could open the knot. Nonetheless, look at the fact that it cost nothing. And I was, and what to me was a good thing about that was that I was not willing to be defeated by not having any money. That's not an acceptable outcome. So you can make something out of nothing. And we've been doing it since we were invented as creatures.
We need to take a quick break right now. And we'll come back and we'll talk more with Connie Kilmark, founder of the Madison-based counseling and consulting firm Kilmark & Associates. We've been having a great time talking about ways to get creative this holiday season, to give of yourself in ways that don't necessarily involve spending lots of money, but do involve lots of care and lots of love. Well, we'd like to hear how you've done that this holiday season as well. Or maybe there's a gift you remember. Connie and I shared a couple of stories of our own, but maybe there's a gift that you remember that was made in this sort of way, maybe low budget but high love, that you remember that's come down through your family, that's come to you. Tell us why it's precious to you, and tell us that story. We'd love to hear that this morning, and just ways that you're finding to make this this holiday season a little bit different in the hard economic times. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642 is the number to call, or you can send us your email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert in this Christmas Eve for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up today on Wisconsin Public Radio, join us for Chapter a Day as Jim Fleming reads The Cricket on the Hearth from Christmas Books by Charles Dickens. Veronica Rickert, keeping you company this Christmas Eve on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn. And this morning, we're talking with Connie Kilmark, founder of the Madison-based counseling and consulting firm Kilmark & Associates, talking about ways to give differently this Christmas, to get creative with the ways you give, whatever holiday that you're celebrating, be it Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas. How have you found to show your love and your friendship that maybe don't involve the amounts of money that you might normally spend? Or how have you been moved by gifts like this yourself over the years? The number to call this morning, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send us email at talk@wpr.org. And we'll take a call now from Susanna in Madison. Hi, Susanna.
Hi. I have been an advocate of putting time and effort into gifts and relationships rather than actual things for a long time.
Good.
And one thing I do for my granddaughter is I make books about her, and the book, making the book costs about, I would say, $20. The most expensive part is the laminating and the spiral bind that I get done at a copy shop.
Mm-hmm.
But I take photographs of her, and now with digital cameras, this is really easy to get reprints made. And so about once every 2 years, I'll go through photographs of her. I'll pick out some good ones. A lot of times the book will be on a theme. The last one I gave her was about all the travels and trips she we take with her. And I cut the photographs into shapes, and I write a line of text about each one. I paste it on slightly stiffened paper, which costs about 4 cents a page.
Hmm.
And then I go to a copy shop and laminate it and have them do the spiral bind.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves these books because they're about her. And so it's fun for me, and it's creative, and it's not very costly, and she loves them.
Well, here's a beautiful example of how a gift will unfold over time.
Yeah.
It's wonderful while you're doing it. It's
yeah.
wonderful while she's very young because she gets to be the star of a real book. It's not just a kind of a folded over piece of lined paper. It's something that has some finishing to it, so it feels kind of like a real book.
Yeah.
But as she gets older and as you leave our planet, she's going to see that each and every year of her life in a different way. And when she's a mom, or if she is around children herself as she gets older, those are going to be exemplars. She'll share them. She may even take up the tradition. Who knows? The
yeah.
fact is that it will continue to expand over time. And that is really, I think, at the heart of this kind of gift giving, that it has significance that is bigger than the physical object. It's a paradox in that funny way.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I just wanted to call it in because when I've brought the books to work, coworkers will say, oh my gosh, I'm going to do this for my kids. And when people see, they might not think of it themselves, but then when they see it, they're like, oh, I can do this too. And like you said, I'm really curious how she'll reflect back on those books when she's older.
Yes.
It certainly captures just a really precious time of her childhood and the excitement of it being about her. She brings them to school and shows them off. And so, yeah, it's fun, it's easy, and it's precious.
Susanna, do you write text with the books as well, or are they picture books?
No, I do write. I'll write, and sometimes I write in her voice, which I feel a little guilty about doing. But sometimes she's sort of the author of the book, you know, and she'll say, I do this, I do that, and here's so-and-so. Sometimes they're rhymed, which is, you know, sort of Dr. Seussy. I mean, they're not that good or that crazy elaborate rhymes,
right.
But sometimes they are rhymed because kids enjoy that. And so that's another challenge on my part. I have to write down words and think of rhymes for them and then figure out how to use those words at the end of lines.
Well, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And this is so accessible. I mean, it really does just take the time and the thoughtfulness. And the fact is that those photographs are so appreciative and impossible to reproduce later. If you're not there paying attention at each developmental stage, you can't go back. And so this is a great way to capture them. Thank you for that wonderful call.
I can see that being a wonderful birthday present every year.
Oh,
way to
absolutely.
Go. Or even New Year's, that one.
Well, it'll get
too.
Embarrassing when she's about 13 and 14, and so she will wish that you haven't and wouldn't and stop. Would you please stop doing it? But persevere and keep them private if you have to, because when she gets to be in her 20s and 30s, she will come back to the appreciation of them.
Yeah, that's when at 13, 14, those are kind of the years you want to forget about.
That's right.
All right, on to Teresa in Green Bay. Hi, Teresa.
Good morning.
Good morning.
In my husband's family, we generally exchange names because there's quite a few of us. And this year it was suggested that we make our gifts, and I don't make anything, but I thought I can cook.
There you go. So you do make
pretty
something.
Pretty busy, and I'm cooking right now.
I hear the microwave going off.
So I'm making chili and spaghetti and things that putting them in mason jars so that they can freeze them or refrigerate them, pull them out when it's a busy day, and save them some time.
That's such a great idea. I love that.
What? you see, cooking is also creative. We really have to get away from this notion that what you want is an expertly made cashmere sweater with cables and pockets. We can't imagine that creativity is only an artfully made, expertly made object. I think that's an extraordinarily good idea. And for heaven's sakes, who doesn't want a nice hot bowl of chili that you didn't have to make, that you didn't have to go to a restaurant and pay for? So thank you.
Is this the first year you've done this, Teresa?
Yes.
Well, you're going to have to call and tell us how it went next year. It's such a good idea. And I know there's many a night that I would love to go to the freezer and pop out something homemade and delicious. So what a good idea.
Well, think about restaurants with me for a moment. Many of us may have to give up some of our restauranting, but the kind of restaurants that I'd like us to give up in a hard time are not the celebration and special event times or places. It's the generic, not very good for you, convenient eating out that we do at lunch every day because we didn't think ahead to make something for ourselves. It's funny because when we invented restaurants, we are acting in a funny way, kind of like royalty. We're saying, for an hour, I'm going to act as if I had a staff. And the staff will come and buy food for me, and it will prepare food for me at my wish and at my whim, and it will clean up after me. Well, you know, we can do all those things for ourselves and reserve our restauranting during a time like this for much more celebratory moments. And as a result, I think what we're going to do is recover our way to feed ourselves inventively and creatively. And here is a person making for others so that they don't have to be paying for a staff at a restaurant to do.
I know lots of appreciative people in Teresa's circle, I bet.
Yeah.
Okay, how about a call from Laura calling from Brookfield? Hi, Laura.
Hi. I wanted to share something that was really gratifying I did when my children were young. We always had the tradition that Santa would fix broken toys or find lost things. If I found something that a child had lost during the couple of months or two before Christmas, I'd tuck it away until Christmas, and those things would magically appear on Christmas morning. Also, I have done where I've taken a gift that they already have and love and embellished it. For instance, making a new dress for a favorite doll or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. I like the magic that you add simply by finding it through general, cleaning or whatever. If you tuck it away and then you add a little piece of story to it for a young enough child, it becomes stunning. It becomes,
it was always magic on Christmas morning.
And look, it took nothing from you except the forethought to tuck it away when you did find it.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Well, I have to ask you, Laura, did Santa also bring new toys, or did he specialize in finding things?
There was always a special something new, but the favorites were really those things that were, you know, broken and fixed. That was we had a rocking horse where all the hair got pulled out, and one year the rocking horse got a new mane and a new tail. So those are always the most fun.
I bet that was even more magical.
Yeah,
it really was. Yeah.
Mm. Even a wooden rocking horse can grow new hair. Perhaps
exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Lauren. Have a happy holiday.
You too.
You see, in these stories, Veronica, we are finding ways to still be in the middle. There are rich people and there are poor people, but they never seem to be quite us. No matter who you ask, they will describe these two categories in ways that make it very clear that we find ourselves to be somewhere in the middle. And depending on which end of the spectrum you look to and so on, you will find ways of either the half-empty glass or the half-full. Every one of these callers is finding ways to look at half-full, three-quarters full, overflowingly full, because after all, there are people to love and people to express yourself to.
And of course, there's all the research now that giving in this way actually makes us happier.
Completely. The anticipatory pleasure of a thoughtful gift that isn't just sort of a sweater scarfed up at the mall at the last minute. That anticipatory pleasure of the just right thing, really, it's almost beside the point whether it ever gets delivered, because the fact is that it's so much fun to anticipate. And then when it does work and it is the just right thing, it's the completion of a conversation. you were already having before the person ever knew that you were talking to them.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
So,
what if you have, let's say, a teenager in your family who really wants, you know, the $150 UGG boots this season? When you're a teenager, I know sometimes, I can imagine, you know, now I can look back on all this, you know, I'm probably quite all the way over it, but I can look back and I can say, yes, I would appreciate all these homemade things. But there's a certain demographic usually in people's families where it's not that cool to get a doily or a little homemade knickknack when what you really want are the UGG boots.
Well, you know,
how do you ease your family into it?
It's developmentally appropriate for teenagers to be very concerned with what people think of them, because their bodies are changing in such dramatic ways, hormonally, physically, in every way. So wanting to fit in is really very natural to especially that age group, and to some degree to all of us. We want to be part of an us. We don't want to be excluded or shunned. And teenagers are very vulnerable to those issues. I think to do what you can do and make sure that those teenagers have confident parents who say, our well-being doesn't depend completely on having what other people have. It depends on us knowing that we have each other, no matter what happens. And it's the confidence with which the parents embody that certainty that's going to, in the long run, make it more okay. If you're apologetic and you fall all over yourself saying, I'm so sorry, I couldn't afford those boots, it's as if now you've created the hardship of not having the boots in the way that you tell the story of not having those boots. So as far as I'm concerned, a lot depends on the inner confidence of parents who know who they are, they know what their values are, and they know that their children are well-loved and well-fed and well-cherished, which is, if you do nothing else right, but you cherish your children and celebrate, as that bookmaker was saying, celebrate and cherish every move that the child makes. That is good child rearing.
Another call now. We have Sean here from Milwaukee. Hi, Sean.
Hi, how's it going?
Going good. How about
good
you?
Good morning. I'm gentleman caller.
Yes. I got a little short story. It's not, I'll bring it up because it's Christmas time and I try to do giving things and stuff year-round. So before our first, I mentioned this because I heard you mention planting bulbs and gardening, and I love gardening, so that's how I try to give during the holidays. And before the very first snowfall, I live in maybe not one of the best neighborhoods down Milwaukee, so and there's a lot of garbage and stuff to a vacant lot to the south of me and whatnot. So before the first snowfall, I went out late, and I procrastinated, and I knew it was supposed to get a big snow the next day. And so I went out late that night with my cordless drill, and I got a little auger planting tulip bulbs and daffodil bulbs.
In an unexpected place.
Yes, and it was getting very late, and I kind of figured, well, maybe I shouldn't be out here, but I wanted to get it done. And sure enough, eventually undercover police comes by and they pull me over and say, what did you bury there? I buried a bulb. And they didn't believe me, and he starts digging. I said, you want to see it? And I show him. And I also had a bag that I was picking up garbage with, and they said, the other cop, what's in the bag? And he says, just garbage. And so, and they checked me out. Where do you live? And it says, don't you think it's a little weird planting bulbs out here? And I said, well, yeah. And I said, but opposed to during the day. And he says, well, yeah, you live in a bad neighborhood. So they checked me out, and before I left, two more squad cars pulled up. They chatted, and then they said, well, whatever. They took off, so I wanted to say you're going to have to wait till spring to find out.
So that was just this year that you did this?
Yep, before our very first snowfall.
Oh, I think this is a great story because it's a story that the police officers can share with each other and did undoubtedly back at the station.
Right, I said they're going to have a story to tell the boys downtown.
And there's going to continue, the story will continue in the spring as the bulbs come up. No, I think that's One year, I have a very odd friend who used to deliver pizzas, and he also used to garden out in the rural part of the county. And he often finished work very late at night. He was stopped by a neighbor who called the police when he was delivering a bunch of asparagus to my back porch in the middle of the night. And again, people couldn't believe that all he was doing by coming into my yard was to deliver this gorgeous gift of spring, a fresh spring asparagus. But there it was, and there was no other way to explain it, and it was an innocent thing. I think sometimes we're surprised by goodness.
Right.
And surprised by innocence. We look on the dark side, especially police officers who are trained for that, you know. So I think it was good for the police officers to discover a piece of innocence and a piece of something pristine.
Well, it's a great way to be surprised when you expect something bad, but you get something beautiful instead.
Indeed.
You know, I can't wait. I'd love to hear about what the neighborhood thinks about with those flower bulbs. I mean, sometimes people just look at them, and sometimes just the gift of seeing a blooming flower can be enough to help someone, just adding bits of beauty to other people's lives.
It may very well start the recovery of that little piece of vacant lot. You know, maybe there'll be some folks that will help clean it up or keep it clean. I remember planting bulbs once in front of a house in a bad neighborhood, and I just wrote a little sign. I painted a little sign creatively. I said, please leave the flowers for others to enjoy, because I was afraid people would just pick them and they would be gone. Never was a single one of them picked.
Hmm.
They were there year after year, and they were the only flowers in that neighborhood. I mean, really, it was student housing, and nobody plants bulbs in student housing. So it was a really nice little gesture.
Hmm. Well, we'll be taking another quick break right now as we continue our discussion about making things for people over the holidays, giving the gift of your love, maybe in the form of something homemade, maybe a meal, maybe some flowers for somebody. How have you expressed your affection for those you love this year? And has it involved less money? Are you going the homemade route? We'd love to hear what you've done, and you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert with you this morning for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Still to come today on Wisconsin Public Radio at 1 o'clock, it's Talk of the Nation. 2008 was quite a year for politics, the election, the scandals, and the rising stars. After 1 on Talk of the Nation, the year in politics with political junkie Ken Rudin. Veronica Rickert with you this morning, joined in the studio by Connie Kilmark, who's come in from the snow to be with us to discuss sort of making homemade gifts this year, cutting back on the money, taking the emphasis off the money and buying things and onto the relationship and expressing that relationship in creative ways. The number to call to join us this morning, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to hear stories of the gifts that have mattered to you over the years that haven't been bought, that have maybe been creative expressions of someone's love for you that haven't involved getting out the credit card. We have a couple of emails here I want to get to. One is from Andy in Mount Horeb, who writes, I'm semi-retired and on Social Security, but for the past few years, I've been making Christmas presents from wood. Oh. I've made cutting boards, serving trays, and this year, small oil lamps. The cost of these lamps is about $3, and when I saw them at an art fair last year, they were selling for $20 or $25. And he says he harvests the walnut or cherry from his own land or a neighbor's land who needed the trees cut.
Beautiful woods, walnut and cherry. Mm-hmm. They have such a beautiful hidden secret. When you cut open walnut, you see grain that's just extraordinary. So there you have time instead of treasure that turns into treasure as a result of the time. You know, this is another evidence of something that's a hidden treasure inside of hard times. When we're prosperous and we have this more than enoughness that has been keynote of American prosperity, I think we become convinced that we really don't need each other. We can own our own laundry and we can own our own computer and we don't need libraries because I can look it up on the internet and I don't need anybody because I can do everything for myself. In harder times, we are reminded that we do need each other. And I think that in finding our usness again, I think we're going to find that it's actually, there's freedom and there's celebration and there's a marvelous discovery that we don't have very easily when there's so, when we're swimming in extra. So I love the I'm intrigued by the notion of an oil lamp made of wood, though, because I'm thinking that the wood would burn.
I think you must insert some glass into it.
It must
like
be the
you
case.
Can see those glass oil lamps where they have the wick and the yeah.
Yes.
I bet that's beautiful.
I think so.
Another email from Karen, who says, "I love to make gifts at Christmas, but art is not a strong point of mine. I freeze and I feel like I can't do it right." And let's see. This year she went out and bought canvas and did what she calls closet art, painted a picture of a bird, a nest, flowers, and three goldfish in a pond. And the instruction on the tag says, place in the closet and forget it. And she thinks her friends will enjoy it for years. Every time they go to their closet, she'll be there.
Well, you know, this is funny because when I opened my very first office, I had a very large storage closet and it had a long, long shelf across the top. And I had bought a poster of a Georgia O'Keeffe painting that was extremely wide and not very high. And this poster came from the Metropolitan in New York. It was in shades of blue with some black on it, a sort of a landscape. And the only place I could find in my office to hang this wonderful painting, which was just a print, was over the shelf inside the closet. So I made sure that there was light in the closet, and whenever I would open that closet, I would be surprised by joy because there was this marvelous print that I never got to see otherwise. So I think her closet art might take on a secret life of its own.
A closet art. I like that concept. That's one of those places, actually, that you just forget about, or if it's my closets, it becomes a place you want to avoid because it makes you feel bad. It's such a mess. But if you started to beautify it, if you put things in there from friends and art, that could be a way to have a little surprise, feel-good space in your home.
Reminds me of something that my father used to share. He came from northern Norway, and 200 miles north of the Arctic Circle, so at Christmas time, there's no light. And this was during the Great Depression. He said that he was always surprised and delighted by two things that were dependable for Christmas. One was a block of clean paper, which was a luxury. And the second was an orange. Getting an orange from where it could grow to the northernmost reaches of Norway, first of all, it's a citrus fruit from the south. Second of all, it's symbolic of the sun and the return of the sun. And so when I think about an orange at Christmas as being a special event, a gratifying and deeply pleasurable gift, so much of this is relative, isn't it? It depends on what's normal during the year and how you make something extraordinary at Christmas. So if you have too much all year long, it's really hard to make Christmas extraordinary. If you have less during the year, things are going to start to become relatively remarkable in a way that's more modest. You can take that orange and you can stick what they call in Norway nellespiker, which means spice nails, into it, which are cloves.
Right.
And then you can wrap a ribbon around it and hang that in your closet. So here we come full circle to closet art and the fragrance as that orange dries out with the spice nails in it, the clove nails. Beautiful.
You used to see those more years ago. You don't see so much of the cloved oranges anymore.
And Veronica, you can do that.
That I could do.
Yes, you could.
I think even I could do that.
Yes, you could.
Okay, let's take another call. Linda in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Linda.
Hi, happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Same to you.
I love this. For years, I've kind of had a problem with all the gift giving. For me, it's more about time and energy.
Mm-hmm.
I take my vacation time and I'll say to my daughter-in-law, I'll give you a week to watch your sons. You can either take it all at 1 week or you can take it a day here, a day there. And I just know that I'm going to spend 40 hours with my grandchildren and give them some time off. And I love it.
There you go.
And, it's so much more useful than going to some beach and laying around. Another thing I like to do is coupons for labor, you know, like when someone needs to finish that bathroom project and they need an extra pair of hands, or shovel drive when they're not feeling well, pet sitting, running errands, you know, just that kind of stuff that someone has a coupon when they need help, they can cash it in, basically.
So it's the gift of community that you're giving. You're saying you're not alone, and when you need a helping hand, here I am, and I'm promising in advance to not only be here now, this day, but also in the future when the need comes up. So you're not alone.
And Linda's right. Nothing's more precious than time. I mean, especially to parents with young kids, but really to everybody. I mean, it can be just the most amazing thing that, you know, you can be offered as a gift of someone's time. And maybe just their time gives you time for yourself, which is precious.
Of course, the time has to come with a good attitude, because if the time comes and you're grumpy during it and you say, well, I made a promise, so I have to keep the promise, that would be the grinchiest of time. So it has to be time with a good heart, which is free. You know, it's a matter of adjusting your inner sense of who you are and bringing a good attitude with you.
Well, thank you for that call, Linda. And on to John calling us from Mercer. Hi, John.
Hi. I would just like to make a comment that we, too, have money to buy gifts, but we choose to start tapping maple trees in the springtime.
Mm.
And, yeah, with the process and everything, that's our Christmas present.
And you boil it and boil it and boil it and boil it.
And boil it.
And boil it some more.
Who you give it to and yes. My partner and everything involved.
Oh, I've seen tree tapping. I've never done it myself, but I am so impressed with how long it takes to boil the sap down, because it's very runny. It's very liquid when it comes out. It needs to get that water out to get the sugar concentrated enough. But boy, is that a flavor. There's nothing like that flavor.
How precious, too, because that's not only, it's coming from John to his friends and family, but it's also coming from sort of like a more organic sense of the land where he lives and the earth, and it's sort of the circle of lifestyle connection, which is
exactly.
Really cool to get over the holidays.
Yes, and a photograph of the process, a set of photographs of the process for especially us ignorant city folk, that would be a pretty cool addition to that gift of the maple syrup.
I wish I was on John's gift list. I'd love to get homemade maple syrup. Anyway, thank you, John, and have happy holidays. And to Alyssa, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Great show today. I wanted to share a family tradition that is probably the most memorable and special tradition in my immediate family. I have three brothers and sisters. We range from the age 25 to 31 right now.
Uh-huh.
And the tradition started over 20 years ago when we were just children. And our parents were pretty working class parents, mm-hmm. family. And they started a tradition where we would draw names over Thanksgiving secretly. There were two rules. You had to make the homemade gift for the person that no one would know whose name you'd drawn. It was a secret. And you couldn't tell anybody. And we exchanged gifts on Christmas Eve. It was the only gift that you had to give anyone in the family.
Huh.
You didn't have to give to anyone else. You didn't have to buy anything. You just had to make something for one person. And as children, there were some pretty mediocre gifts. But as the years went on, there were some really amazing things given. But looking back on it, I think the thing that we learned the most, and it was ingrained at a very young age, that Christmas was really about giving.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent 6 weeks preparing to give one gift to one person. And you spent much less time thinking about what you would receive than what you were going to give. And some of the most treasured things that I have are things that were given as a homemade gift from my siblings or my parents.
And do you ever learn in this tradition, do you ever learn who it was that made it?
Oh, yes. When we exchange them on Christmas Eve, we say, like, we'll start with the oldest person in the family.
Okay.
And then they'll give to whoever they drew. And then you, whoever received that, gives to who they have. And you
I
go
see.
Around.
I
and
see.
The other rule is you can't have the person that you had the year before. Those are the only rules.
Now, was Mom the keeper of all of the information so that she would know who everyone drew for?
I think sometimes. But she would always say that she could never remember things anyways, so she would forget immediately. But we would physically draw a name out of a hat, and you'd think, well, did I have this person last year? No. And then you would keep that little piece of paper.
And if you did have the name before, then you would put it back in and draw again.
Mm-hmm.
And that would take care of itself, because everybody would get a different person.
Yeah, and it also taught us to not focus on consumerism.
Uh-huh.
Because it was never about going out and buying things. And we did receive gifts the next day from Santa and our parents.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the most special part of Christmas was the homemade gift.
You know, the part of your story that I like so much is the amount of time and the focus. Because I think if you have that much time, you notice little clues. You've got time to be noticing things about that person that are going to cue you to the just right kind of thing. And then time to actually devote to the doing. But it's the paying attention to who is this other person, not shall I give this person what I would like to receive, but how can I make something that is going to actually be uniquely for this person? And that kind of attention is also a great gift.
Well, thank you, Alyssa, for that call. And thank you, Connie Kilmark, for coming in. Lots of wonderful ideas here. I feel inspired for maybe it's too late for this Christmas, but next Christmas I'm going to try to get creative and all through the year. I appreciate your time this morning, and I wish you only the happiest of holidays.
Well, thank you. There'll be good food. It won't be expensive, but there'll be plenty of it. So... Thank
and good
you, Veronica.
Company. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot. Connie Kilmark with us this morning. She is the founder of the Madison-based counseling and consulting firm, Kilmark and Associates. We wish you happy holidays today. And I thank Brittany DeAnda for on-air production this morning, Carmen Jackson and Rhonda Fanning for production this week. If you'd like a copy of this program, you can get one at the radio store by calling 1-800-747-7444. That's 1-800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1224D. I'm Veronica Rickert with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.